Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your Wiretaps Podcast for Monday, March 30th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things?
Well, like everyone else, Graham, you know, COVID-19 is absolutely affecting pretty much everything that I'm doing.
Yeah, guys, and just so that our listeners can really get some insight into Alex's world, I think, Alex, everything was okay for you given your rural location until they decided to close the local pub. That sounds like that's been a difficult adjustment for you.
Yes. But yeah, then, you know, frankly speaking, obviously the last week or so, the crisis has accelerated. And I think just regular folk around here are absolutely realizing that the importance of, you know, things like social distancing and you know, various other things. I think, you know, maybe a couple of weeks ago we were chatting about it, but now we recognize absolutely we've all got to participate in order to slow the acceleration of what's happening.
Yeah, and that's the same here in Paris, where, you know, we've been under lockdown for a while, but it's definitely, you know, you see someone walking towards you on the sidewalk, and all of a sudden it's now you got to, you know, make sure you're far enough away, and it just changes the way that we interact with people, and that's that, you know, that it is what it is. We have to do it to sort of get through this, but it is a really strange thing to, you know, even simple things. I was watching a movie the other day, and this guy was shaking the hand of everyone coming into his restaurant, and I was like, don't shake his hand.
I recognize that feeling because I'm watching TV last night and they were hugging, and I'm like, you really shouldn't be doing that.
Right. So in any event, so yeah, coronavirus is sort of everywhere in the news, and it is, I mean, yeah, on a more, you know, somber note, like it is really devastating to see the acceleration in certain countries, you know, Spain and Italy, obviously, and the U.S. I think is, you know, next in line to really see this accelerating. I mean, it already is, and it's just, so hopefully everyone can social distance and get through it. We'll be here all through to provide you with MBA admissions related news. And I guess the one thing I did want to say is that as our listeners know, most admitted students events have been taken online. There's no, you know, schools are not hosting anybody on their campuses. There are no campus tours. And we've got that great COVID-19 chart on the site where you can see what's happening at all the top business schools. We're going to try to add some more schools to that and just keep it up to date. We typically look at it every day and update it with the latest news. The other thing, Alex, is that in the midst of all of this, this continues to be a really busy time over on clearadmit.com for people to share news of admissions outcomes. And, you know, I guess last week we had, what, Wharton and Haas and UCLA and Kellogg. And so do you want to, I mean, there's been a lot going on. I know you wanted to share something about Kellogg's acceptance notification. That was kind of an interesting twist, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was very busy last week. As you say, I mean, COVID-19 is affecting us all, but it also happens to coincide with the busiest week or two's period in the admission cycle when people are waiting and getting those round two decisions. It's interesting how schools are trying to adapt. And I'm obviously quite focused on the sort of the marketing angle and stuff because I actually, in another world, I teach digital marketing and stuff like that. And, you know, I thought Kellogg's approach was quite creative, Graham. I mean, here they decided to, you know, as they're announcing decisions, to host a Zoom meeting for all admitted candidates on the day of releasing those decisions. So I actually thought that was pretty creative. I mean, obviously, when they're reaching out to candidates to say you're invited to this Zoom meeting and it also happens to be on the day we're going to announce decisions, that candidates pretty much knew why they were going to the Zoom meeting. But nevertheless, I think absolute kudos to Kellogg for doing something which I think is actually, you know, yeah, very creative.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I think, you know, obviously they weren't going to have a Zoom meeting to tell the folks that are getting rejected that they're rejected. So yeah, clearly it was a signal that if you're invited to the Zoom, you're in. The other hint was that some of the candidates saw that the background check sort of check mark on their file opened up the night before, which was a signal to them that, oh, I'm going to go through this background check process, so I'm probably admitted. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, none of this stuff's perfect, but I do think it really creative. And I mean, the part of me is also like, hey, get used to Zoom, because this is how you're going to have the admitted students event and maybe even your first semester of business school. Who knows, right? So we'll see. But
it's also how your kids are going to be interacting with their classmates. I mean, if Zoom is a public stock, it's probably one of the few that would be going through the roof right now.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, true, true. In fact, my kids are using it too for some of their schoolwork. So what's up this week though? We've got, I mean, just, you know, I couldn't believe how busy last week was, but this week there's still some big guns coming down the pipeline in terms of decisions, right?
Big guns. So many of us would call them the biggest guns, right? Harvard and Stanford are rolling out this week. So yeah, it should be another exciting week in terms of getting decisions. Obviously, COVID-19 is going to be looming large over all of our sort of sentiments and stuff. But yeah, this week you've got Harvard and Stanford. Sloan, I think, is also one of the big guns firing this week. So there's lots and lots of stuff going on right now.
Yeah, so stay tuned for all those announcements. One other thing I just wanted to mention is that we did publish our survey. You know, many of you, I'm sure, who listened participated in a survey that we ran up on the site about the impact of the coronavirus on your decision to go off to business school or to apply to business school. And so for the survey results that we published on the site, we actually focused on people heading off to school this fall. Because we had a nice group there and we're able to quickly crunch the numbers. But you can see on the site, if you're curious, what are applicants who've got admits in hand saying about, you know, their fears and, you know, what are they kind of, how do they feel about going off to business school? I personally think that this, like, probably couldn't be a better time to be going, because by the time they get to business school, I think fall classes will happen in person. I mean, it's possible that they don't, but I think there's a good chance they will. And I think that, you know, 2 years from now when they're graduating, like, it, you know, the economy will be probably kickstarted, and I have a feeling things will be very different. The folks that I feel more for would be someone who's graduating right now. I mean, this is a real difficult time, or maybe even a first-year student who's having trouble with internship sourcing for this summer because of everything that's happened. So, but yeah, check out our survey. It's on the website. And obviously, we're going to continue to provide more data from that survey as the days go on here. Other news, I did look, Alex, I don't know why, I kind of torture myself. I looked to see how many likes you have. You've got 250 when I last checked.
Nice.
And I'm at like about 80. So I had a nice weekly increase, but I'm still way behind you. And we have a number of, you know, starred users. Those are folks who've earned a number of likes. And I know you were telling me that this group of users on the site, those of you posting regularly, getting likes, have actually cumulatively, have they hit 1,000 cumulative likes as a group now or something like that?
It's 1,200 now, Graham.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, people are definitely enjoying your contributions if you're contributing. And I guess those were the main kind of newsy things I had for this week, Alex. I guess you had picked out two ApplyWire entries and one DecisionWire entry for our wiretaps portion here. Is there anything else, though, that you wanted to share before we kind of move into that stuff?
No, I just articulate the sentiment. Everybody, clearly, these are very difficult times for us all. Stay safe and, you know, make the most of what you can. But yeah, stay safe mostly.
Yeah, I'll echo that. We definitely want everyone to stay healthy and stay inside. Stay with us on the computer or hang out on quidmit.com, whatever you need to do to find some sanity, find your fellow applicants and others, you know, who are dealing with the kind of MBA admissions process. I find personally, you know, I love doing these podcasts. It's a good distraction from the regular news cycle. So without further ado, though, let's dive in. So as I said, Alex, you've picked out a couple of ApplyWire entries and one interesting DecisionWire post. So let's go in with Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is applying to Berkeley, Columbia, HBS, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Chicago Booth, and Wharton. They are planning on starting business school in 2022. So they're, you know, just kind of an early bird. They have a background in engineering. They're kind of working at manufacturing at a Fortune 100 aerospace company. And post-MBA, they'd love to get into consulting, ideally with Bain, BCG, or McKinsey. GMAT score is 740, a 3.6 GPA. They will have 4 years of experience by the time they go off to business school, located in the US, and they would love to be in the Northeast when they're done with business school. Now, this person shared a wealth of information and a number of really great questions about how to kind of position their candidacy. But they also did share the fact that they love our podcast. They said, "Hi, Graham, Alex, and the Clear Admit community. Awesome podcast. I've gone through 5 Clear Admit podcasts every week on my way to and from work, and I'm now caught up to the most recent episode." That took them 3 months, they said. So that's dedication. We love it. And then, you know, they just, you know, asked to be featured because they have a number of questions. And Alex, I think it makes sense for us to just walk through some of these questions, because they mentioned that they are an overrepresented minority, or yeah, or overrepresented majority. I don't know how you, so Asian American male, right? And they had a number of really interesting questions, but I don't know if you want to kind of get into some of it. There were questions about the GMAT score and how they can stand out. There are just a number of things. So why don't we just try to tick through some of these and provide them with answers? So the first question was, they're wondering, like, is there anything they can do to improve their candidacy for Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, beyond like maybe taking the GMAT again and getting like above 760? And you didn't think, you weren't so keen on this GMAT retake idea, right?
Yeah, I mean, the student has a 740, or the applicant has a 740. Is 760 better? There's absolutely no denying that, right? So I'm not trying to, you know, say that, you know, it wouldn't make any difference. I just think when you've already got an outstanding score, getting an outstanding score plus one or two is going to be less impactful than, let's say, really pushing for additional role at work that really shows some really interesting characteristics about yourself or something like that. Like really pushing for that, showing that you're a person of impact in all walks of life. That's the sort of stuff that really resonates with the very top schools, whether it's at work or outside of work in your communities. So, you know, supporting, you know, I think, you know, high school STEM majors, like getting truly involved in that rather than just doing a little bit of teaching or something. That would, to me, that would be materially more beneficial. But that's not to say that a 760 score is not better than a 740. It is. I just think with the effort to push it up 20 points, you put that effort into other aspects of your candidacy that really can move the meter, that's probably a better use of your time.
Agreed. And I think, you know, that they've taken it twice to get the 740. And I'm kind of wondering, like, what does a school think when they see, you know, 3 scores on the score report? And, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily the best use of this person's time, as you say. They did, I looked at the percentiles, okay? So they have a 94th percentile on the verbal, which is great considering they were a mechanical engineering and finance major. I love to see a high verbal score when I see a candidate who's kind of a, you know, could be pigeonholed as just a numbers person. And the math, they have a 74th percentile, which we know the math section is increasingly difficult to get a high percentile on because the non-native English speakers know that that's their only real way to kind of earn points. And so the curve has been kind of blown on the math side. So it would require a fair amount of effort to like get above that. I wasn't sold on the need to do it. I recognize they have a 3.5 and that's maybe a little below average, or 3.6, whatever it is, like a little around average, below average. It's not stellar like a 3.8 would be for a top school. But again, mechanical engineering and finance at a decent school. So I feel like the academic piece of this candidate's profile is probably where it needs to be. Like I would focus elsewhere.
Yeah, and it certainly doesn't disqualify them from Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is kind of my point. It puts them in the picture, right? And what qualifies someone at the very, very top schools is a person that has a habit of making an impact at work, outside of work. more so at work than outside of work. So go to your supervisor, lay out a plan for the next couple of years of taking on really challenging projects, or whatever it might be. Maybe you can get an opportunity to do some overseas work or something like that that you wouldn't have been able to do otherwise, or whatever it might be. But to me, that would be the path for this candidate to pursue. What I really like about this candidate is they are planning 2 years ahead, so they can make these adjustments now. So that should put them in good stead.
So they had a number of other questions. I'm just going to kind of rapid fire some of them. So they asked if they should, you know, go for a kind of COO or a CEO goal in the long term, like whether one makes more sense than the other. I mean, my view is that it doesn't really matter, but I feel like if they're kind of a manufacturing and engineering person, COO might actually be like more plausible, or it might just fit better and be less common, right? I mean, the number of kids that apply to Harvard or Stanford and say, well, I want to be CEO of a Fortune 500 company, you know, that they're everywhere, right? So the idea of like, oh, COO, that's kind of interesting. It's a little bit, it's more of an operations focus. And, you know, it just, I feel like that would be less common, and it'll sound more thought out, right? Obviously, this person should write what they're most passionate about, but I'm just saying if they're asking me which one. They also ask, how do they get to the C-suite from consulting, which is their short-term goal? And I would say, I mean, you know, they could read up about this, but the typical path is, you know, you go to a McKinsey or a Bain or whoever it is, and you work for a while, you do extensive work with a specific client who ends up making you an offer you can't refuse to join, and you work your way up in the ranks. You know, you start as a, you know, at the executive level, and you just head on up to the top. So that's actually not so uncommon. I mean, you see a lot of C-level executives who've had come from a consulting background, so that can happen. The one that I wanted to ask you, there are two other things I want to say about this, and then we should move on because we want to give everyone their time on the, you know, on wiretaps. But the two things I was curious about is they asked if they're reaching too high, and if, you know, just to remind our listeners, their school selection was the M7, so Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, Chicago, Kellogg, MIT, Columbia, plus Haas. That's their school selection right now, and they're wondering if they're reaching too high, and I don't know if you have a thought on that, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I don't think they are. If they execute well and if they take on these challenging projects over the next couple of years and really are able to show that they're an impact person, to me, that's key. They're doing manufacturing as an engineer. I think Adcom liked that, right? I mean, he's doing stuff. He's creating stuff, making stuff. Whatever it is that, you know, an engineer does in manufacturing, they're doers. And you know, typically that could be portrayed very well, and especially, again, if they're taking on additional and more challenging assignments in that domain, I think that will be very good. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, they should be able to position themselves to compete for a spot in one of the very elite business schools. That's very good. If they want to look at the next tier down, which, you know, that's fine. I mean, application strategy says include reaches, include target schools, and then include one or two safeties. If they want to do that, then schools like Ross and schools in that tier might well be worth looking at. And a school like Ross is still a very, very good proposition for a candidate like this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, my thought was, you know, ask me that question in a year or, you know, or so when you've got additional experience and we know kind of where your work experience is falling in terms of your, and even, you know, as your extracurricular activities are further developed, then it'll be clearer to me. I think obviously for now, they're a couple of years out, why not focus on the very best and work towards that? I do think it's an odd strategy to apply to the entirety of the M7 plus Haas, which is arguably the top eight schools in the US. I think ideally, as you say, you know, in the end, they'll probably want to have at least one, quote, safety. It's probably more like a top 15 school. But again, too early to say, and I wouldn't worry too much about that for now. The last thing I wanted to mention about this candidate is they wondered, like, where do they get this X factor? And you're saying it's from impact. I also felt like in this rather lengthy post that they shared, I didn't get a sense for like what they're sort of passionate about or what their kind of personal hobbies are or just personal experience. And I know most of the top MBA programs have the luxury of being able to dig into that stuff, you know, because they get so many candidates who tick all the boxes academically, work experience wise. The goals are cool. They do volunteer work, but then they also get to find out like what else makes this person tick and what are they interested in. And so I would encourage this candidate to cultivate some of those elements as well. I mean, you can imagine a scenario where if they were the, you know, engineering, finance, aerospace candidate who wants to get in consulting, but who also is an a cappella group singer, like that changes everything, right? I mean, it just gives them a complete, they stand out and it makes someone different. And so, or whatever it might be, you know, if they're a cyclist or, you know, just other things that people enjoy doing. So I think that's part of what can be missing sometimes. So I would work on that too. I think that's enough on this one, unless you had anything else you wanted to add.
No, I think that's very good. Just the final point, I mentioned this to the candidate, and I'll explain why on this podcast, is, you know, you're thinking 2 years ahead. Stanford's in is one of the schools they picked, even though they recognize that's an absolute reach. I'm like, print out that first essay prompt and spend the next year drafting it up. I really do like Stanford's first essay because I think it really pushes candidates for a deep level of introspection. So it's just great preparation. You know, I wouldn't suggest, you know, just going in now and writing career goals essays 2 years out. I think that becomes a little bit of an odd task. But that first essay of Stanford's, I think no matter what school you end up applying to, will prove very useful at this point.
Yeah, that's good feedback. And I know, you know, that we once did an April Fool's post about a candidate drafting the Stanford What Matters Most essay for the, you know, that they were on their like 872nd draft or something, because it's such a challenging question. But yeah, it's a good one to sort of noodle on. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is an ApplyWire post, and this person is looking to start in 2023. So this is, we've got some people who are long-term planning here. The difference is that this person is currently an undergraduate student, and they're really targeting kind of, you know, HBS 2+2 and these other deferred enrollment MBA programs where you apply now, get in, and then you go off and work. So they're looking at Columbia, Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Booth, and Wharton. So a lot of the usual kind of M7 suspects there. Again, starting in 2023, they are currently, I guess they've been working in retail and they want to get into social impact and maybe nonprofit after business school. The GMAT score, this person's already taken the GMAT despite being a college student. The GMAT score is 740. And the GPA is an astounding 4.0. So, Alex, yeah, what did you say to this person? Because it's a little tricky to assess. They haven't done a lot of work yet. They're actually, I guess, they already have a job lined up, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's like basically a rotational program with, I guess it's in corporate finance, but it's with a major retailer. And I think it's the retailer that they'd interned at or something. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what do you think of this person? Because this is, it's always, as we've said, we did a whole podcast on deferred enrollment MBAs. And we talked about how the admissions team has this real challenge of like figuring out like who do we take based on the limited data points around work and leadership?
Yeah, like you say, the data points are more limited, so therefore each data point is more important, right? In terms of trying to figure this stuff out. So you know, overall, what are ADCOM going to look at for a candidate applying out of university for a deferred admission? They're going to look at someone that's done well academically. So I think this person checks that box, right? 4.0, 740 GMAT. I think that's fine, right? So that side of it checks. They're going to look at, were they active on campus? Were they a leader, right? So, you know, I think the person said, yep, that's absolutely fine. You know, I led this and I've done that. So that's going to be very important. And then from their internship side of it, you know, useful internships, can they get a good recommendation from them and so on and so forth? Do they then have a plan going forward? It seems like they've got an offer from the place that they've done an internship. So hopefully that's a very good and, again, a positive signal. The other side of it is, do they have a really well laid out plan such that it makes sense for them to apply to the business school now to fit into this plan they've already gotten developed, right? Because a lot of people are graduating college and they really don't have that sort of longer term vision. So it seems like this person has that. I would like to see a little bit more in terms of really understanding from a social impact side what they're looking to do. Because clearly, you know, most seniors, juniors, seniors are thinking, well, I want to save the world. I'll figure it out at some point how I'm going to do it, right? Because you're kind of idealistic at that point, right? So do they have something concrete behind that idealism that they really are passionate about pursuing? I think that would really help. The other side of it, Graham, and I'm going to push this back to you to see what you think. This person's graduating from a state school, right? So this is no Harvard, Yale, Princeton type person, right? A state school from Arkansas, I assume. Their location is in Arkansas. So how do you reckon that factors? So if this same profile came and they said they were from Harvard, Yale, or Princeton, how would that change your perception of this candidate?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I know for a fact that some of the schools that have these deferred enrollment programs and have kind of direct line recruiting with undergraduate campuses, they pick and choose the campuses that they go after because they, you know, they know that there are a lot of really sharp kids at some of these top undergrads. So I think on the margin, this person, yeah, it's not an advantage to be at a big state school in Arkansas if that's where they are versus, say, you know, having gone to Amherst or Princeton or one of these, you know, kind of top schools. At the same time, you know, they've done everything they can. Like, they got a 4.0. So it's not like you could say, oh, they have a 3.5 at Arkansas State or wherever they would be. And that's actually the equivalent to like a 3.0 at Princeton or something. You know, that's not going to happen here because they have a 4.0. So you can't really, I'm not so worried about it. To me, to be frank, what I worried about with this candidate was this idea that, you know, they had this internship with a retail company and have been offered a corporate finance rotation with that company. So I'm thinking, you know, this is a big retail outfit. And so it sounds really interesting and they'll be able to rotate around and learn a lot. But what I'm not grasping is the career plan. Like, they talk about social impact and, as you say, kind of saving the world type stuff. But I don't see, like, what I was looking for is like, well, where's the evidence of that in their kind of current activity on campus and in their current studies or, frankly, even in their, like, their proposed job post college here, which is more of a retail finance, you know, finance job. And so that was the only thing that I was worried about. I was kind of like, well, wait, if you really care about social impact and you want to go change the world, why are you not doing that right now? Like, why don't you just go after what you want to do? Because so that was the only thing, is I just worried that there was like, is this social impact story designed to kind of pull at the heartstrings of the admissions reader, or is it a legitimate, pursuit of this candidate? And maybe I got a little sense of it in their comments where they kind of mentioned that they want to change consumer packaged goods. And so maybe they have this whole vision for how we can completely redefine, you know, how we buy milk, or, you know, how we get products that are kind of dry goods and can do so with like a much more eco-friendly approach to packaging, or, you know, maybe just the milkman comes to your house once a week, or, you know, whatever it is, right? Going back to ways of being a little more eco-conscious, right? So maybe that's there, but I it was unclear. So that was my main concern. I was like, and I recognize the goals are going to be less formed because the person's in college still, but that was my concern looking at it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a valid concern. I do also think it's a little bit related to my concern of whether the goals are just based on idealism coming out of college versus realism. But anyway, I think we can both agree that these goals could be better developed. And if they were, they would make a material difference. The academic side looks super strong, and it looks like they've done well at college in terms of being involved, which is very good. And, you know, they've got their short-term career bit lined up very well. So that seems quite good. The only other thing I'd bring up when I talk about this idea of state school versus, you know, Harvard, Yale, Princeton or whatever, the other side of it could be, this could be a bootstrapper. There could be a real reason why their only opportunity was to go to their local state school. They didn't have the opportunity to get, you know, into one of the big schools with a real rigorous admissions entrance. But like you said, Graham, they've made the most of it. And now they're seeking that sort of opportunity to get to that real next level. So yeah, very interesting candidate, I think.
And you're absolutely right about the state school cuts both ways. Like, you know, the top MBA programs are looking for bootstrappers. And so, yeah, there could be any number of circumstances. And so, I would never rule someone out based on where they went to undergrad, especially if they have a 4.0, right, as I said. So I think, again, if they could just work on the career kind of vision a little bit more, I think they could make a compelling case at any number of these programs. So anyway, thanks for that post. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a DecisionWire post that we received from a candidate who is undecided. They applied to Carnegie Mellon, to Duke, to UNC, and to Vanderbilt. And they were admitted at Carnegie Mellon, UNC, and Vanderbilt, and I believe they're on the wait list at Duke. So in terms of money, Carnegie Mellon offered them $60,000, UNC offered them $30,000, and Vanderbilt Owen offered them $70,000. GMAT score was 710, GPA 3.8. They want to work in consulting after business school, and this is a US-based candidate. And they mentioned in their notes, they said, look, I was waitlisted at Duke, I turned down Carnegie Mellon, so it's down to UNC and Owen, and I'm leaning UNC as I want to stay East Coast, like Philly, DC, or Atlanta. I enjoyed Carolina's visit a bit more than Owen's. The network is larger. UNC's sports cancel out Nashville's nightlife, and I believe UNC has a bit stronger recruiting into healthcare consulting. So, because obviously this candidate not only wants to do consulting, but ideally kind of get into the healthcare domain of consulting. So, yeah, what do you make of this? It's kind of an interesting set of results and decision making.
Quite honestly, if you said I got admitted to Carnegie Mellon, UNC, Vanderbilt, you know, my first blush would be, well, it's probably juggling between Tepper and Keenan Flagler, because I would consider them in probably a tier a little bit above Vanderbilt. But then you get into some of the nuances, right? So this person, I think, already graduated from a school in Pittsburgh, which they thoroughly enjoyed, but now are looking for maybe a little bit of a different experience. And then they're also looking at maybe a healthcare angle and so on and so forth. So for those reasons, they decided, you know, maybe Tepper's not the best fit for me. And that shifts it between Keenan Flagler and Vanderbilt Owen. And I think both schools actually have a good reputation, right, in healthcare. So that's very good. We look at, you know, your feedback, mine, actually, and from the community. And I think the consensus is probably Keenan Flagler's just slightly the better option at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I actually, I'll definitely agree with you that, you know, UNC's, you know, top 20 school for many people. And I think Vanderbilt's sort of more top 25. And so there's a slight difference in ranking there. Again, I just feel like for consulting, you know, UNC has a really good reputation in that domain. I mean, even the employers that hire consultants out of the school say a lot of good things. And they're one of those rare MBA programs that have concentrations that are career oriented. So instead of like, oh, I want to concentrate in, you know, data analytics or, you know, some type of finance or marketing, their concentrations tend to be built around jobs, right? So they literally have a consulting concentration at the school that gets really good reviews from employers and students alike. So I can see how, you know, but yeah, for me, the issue here was that, wow, you know, you look at Carnegie Mellon and UNC, and you could say they're kind of peers, but Carnegie Mellon's giving this person double the money, right? $60,000 versus $30,000. But what I love about this post is that, as you say, the truth comes out in the details where the person's like, you know, actually, I went to undergrad in Pittsburgh. I love Pittsburgh, but I kind of want a new experience. And, you know, there's a lot going on with healthcare down in the Research Triangle down in North Carolina. So I get it. I think, you know, if it comes down to Vanderbilt or UNC, I think UNC makes sense here. And they've outlined exactly, you know, why that's the case. So a good post, though, because I think most people reading it at first are like, huh, that's interesting that they took those three offers and turned it into, well, it's either UNC or Vanderbilt. And they even note that they've already turned down, you know, Tepper. So what do you do, though? What about, what do you think about the Duke waitlist? Should they be pressing hard on that? Or do you sort of feel like, hey, you know what, go off to UNC, just be done with it? Or should they be pushing on that?
I would go for it. Why not? I mean, by not going for it, you're already discounting that as an option. So keep the option open at this point. But they're probably going to have to deposit at UNC, which is perfectly fine. Then if they come off the wait list at Duke, they've got to decide then if they want to pay two deposits. But at this point, I think it would be foolish to abandon it.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, Duke's obviously really good with healthcare as well, and consulting placements. So I think absolutely stay on the wait list and see what you can do. I expect there's going to be a lot of wait list movement this year. I think this year's going to pose some unique challenges, and that schools are going to use their lists pretty judiciously. So in any event, best of luck. And thanks so much for that post.
I'm not sure, Graham, they're going to use them judiciously. I think they're going to admit a lot of people off the wait
list. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I misused the word. Yeah, they're going to go to that well a lot, because I think there are going to be a number of international candidates who, you know, maybe can't come for one. I mean, the visa, there's a lot of issues right now. Schools that don't, you know, typically have to go might go more.
It's not often I get to correct you, Graham. I'm quite proud of myself.
I know. I know. You got me. All right. So I think that's about it for this week. Thanks for picking out these three posts. And yeah, we'll be back in a week's time with all the news. And I think, you know, this week's going to be really interesting with Harvard and Stanford and MIT coming out. So there'll be lots to report on, as well as, you know, continued updates on COVID-19. So stay tuned. And thanks to everyone for listening. And please stay healthy. And just do your best to socially isolate yourself.
Best of luck, everybody. Good luck.